thank you guys. There we go. Thank you guys. I want to start off. I need a guy volunteer from the audience. I need like a big guy. Big. How about you? Can you come up? Yeah, you look like fun. Come on up. Yeah. Cool. What's your name?
Jesse.
Yeah. Everybody say hi, Jesse. Hi, Jesse. Now, Jesse, do you know what the talk is on today?
Nope.
You guys know what the talk is on? The sex talk, Jesse. So, since this is a sort of a sex talk, we've got to cover certain issues, like how far is too far to go with a girl on a date, you know, and stuff like that. And so, what Jesse and I are going to do is we're actually going to show you guys how far is too far to go on a date, okay? And in order to do this, I'm going to be the guy, and Jesse's going to be the girl, okay? Now we need to get Jesse prettied up a little bit for the date. So now I'm not sure that this will make a world of difference, but let's try this on. That's the front there. It's a little nappy, but you'll be pretty.
Put it on.
Wow, what a makeover. That's a makeover. Now, I've never dated anyone named Jesse before, so we're going to give you a name change. Your name is going to be Shanene, okay? Now, Shanene and I, we decided to go for a date at the Grand Canyon. So it's real romantic, and so, like, let's say this court is the Grand Canyon. I started thinking, well, how far do you think I can get my beloved Shanene here?
Not bad.
How far can I get my beloved Shanene to the edge of the Grand Canyon without actually throwing him off the Grand Canyon? So the only way to find out how far he can go, I've got to pick you up into my arms, okay?
You got what?
Pick you up into my arms. So you hold on to this with that one. You hold on to me with this one. Hold on tight.
Lean back. Hold on. There we go. Now give me the mic.
Now, how far can we go to the edge? Can we go further?
Nope.
Okay, just kidding. All right. Take a seat, Jesse. Give him a hand. Good job, guys. Now, what's the point of that whole deal? Point of that is basically this, that none of us guys would take a girl that we love to a dangerous place and say, well, now, how close can I get to killing her? You know, usually we don't ask the question. But when I was in high school, the one question I had was like, well, you know, how far can you go with your girlfriend? You know, I mean, can you do this on a date? Can you do that on a date? And looking back, what I was pretty much asking was, well, how far can I go with my girlfriend before I do something with her that she's never going to want to tell her future husband that I ever did with her? How far can we go to do that? And obviously, it wasn't the right question to ask, and I was in all sorts of stuff, and I was looking everywhere to fill up something in my life. I was at the beach a few months ago. I live in San Diego, and the beach that I surf at is called Scripps Pier. And I got done surfing, I paddled ashore, and I sat down on the beach, and then up walks up to me on the beach this completely buck-naked 2-year-old girl. She's like, wee, 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 wee. She's got, like, sand all over her butt and everything. And she just walks up to me, and she sits on my lap. She's like, and I'm like, whoa, yeah. Nice to meet you. Aren't you friendly? And I introduced myself, and I'm sitting there, and then she's got these brothers over here that are like 5 and 6 years old or something, and they've dug a little hole in the sand, and they've got all these action figures, and they're trying to make a swimming pool for their action figures, and they're like, we need water for the pool, yeah. So they run to the Pacific, and they scoop up about like 10 gallons of water in this big bucket. They drag it on the sand to get back this little hole, and then they dump the whole bucket of water into the sand. Needless to say, all the water sinks through. And the kids are just totally confused. They're like, oh. They're like, oh, we must need more water. Yeah. And they go back to the ocean, got like 30 more gallons, bring it back, dump it in, it sinks through. They go back. They spent almost an hour shuttling back and forth hundreds of gallons of water to the stupid hole, thinking eventually it was going to get filled. And I sat there just loving life. It was so entertaining to watch how frustrated they became. But that was me in a nutshell when I was in high school, grabbing onto everything, thinking eventually it's going to fill me. And it started out like the freshman year. First group of friends I got into was a bunch of guys, and our thing to do was vandalism. And so we'd go around the city and we'd trash everything, but it got a little old, so it was immature. Next group of friends I got into, our thing to do was more drinking and a lot of the sports. And so I got really into the sports, and I went on to play 3 years of baseball in college, and it was great. And I remember as a freshman in high school, I show up to baseball practice, and my first baseman is crying. during practice. And I'm like, you know, there's really no crying in baseball. What's the matter, Paul? And he's like, Jason, he's like, that's not funny, man. He said, Jason, your buddy Rick there, who's our pitcher, he said, Jason, your buddy Rick had a couple more drinks after school yesterday. He flipped his truck and he got decapitated, Jason. He's dead. And so we buried, you know, Rick in the baseball uniform, signed the ball, put an extra body in the casket. Then I show up at work and my friend Joe was gone. And I was like, well, where's Joe? Don't we have the same shift tonight? And I said, no, man, you didn't hear? Go in the back, read the article. I go in the back and there's Joe's picture in the newspaper. And he's always getting fights in the parties. And so he got in a fight. He's on cocaine and drinking. And the guy just pulled a gun out, shot him in the head and killed him. So one by one, it all starts to fall through for me. I'm thinking, man, what's going to give me my fun and my thrills without all the regret? And I said, I know where it's going to be fun. With ladies, that's where it's going to be fun. So I got in these relationships with girls that were very physical, very fast. Just right off the bat, it was intensely physically intimate. And I remember I was with this one girl, and we were doing all sorts of stuff. She stops me at one point, and she's like, Jason, you're not going to leave me like the other guys, are you? And I was like, no. Huh? And she's like, oh, you're so sweet. Oh, and I was like, okay, anyway, whatever. And we did different things. Then we came up to that line, and I had to say, okay, should I give this girl my virginity? And I was like, well, you know, I've held on to it now for 16 whole years. And I was like, well, do I love her? And I was like, well, I've known her for 3 days. And I was like, well, and could hear in the back of my heart this voice that said, Jason, this gift is not for her. That gift's for me. Please wait for me. And so we cooled things down. We went our different ways. We didn't go through with it. And then I hooked up with this other girl, came right up to that line, and then that same exact voice, Jason, this gift is not for her. It's for me. Please wait for me. And we cooled things down. We went our separate ways. And so to this day, I'm still a virgin, and I'm as happy as can be. Now, most people think, though, that by the time you get in your 20s, you, like, die of virginity or something. Like, I'll start having virginity conniption fits or something. You know, like, you know, abstinence is very good. You know, so twitching at the mouth from virginity and foaming at the mouth, and I'll like explode and die, you know, virginity. And Jeff, you'll be sitting there and he'll be like, whoa, what happened to the sex guy? You know, and you're like, oh, you didn't hear the guy was a virgin, that'll kill you. And this is pretty much what we're told, that, you know, if you're a virgin, you know, there's something wrong with you, you're dropped on your head as a baby, you know, and if you're not a virgin, well then, dude, it's just too late for you to ever get real love. And the thing is, like, it's not lethal to be a virgin. I was at the airport the other day. I saw this up at the newsstand. I had to pick it up. It's called Complete Woman Magazine. Okay, it's a subscribe. Okay, it's a splendid periodical, and here it's like page 17, and there's this guy talking about sex, and he says, quote, he says, sex is extremely important to me, and he said, when I'm in a relationship, it is essential. In fact, a year ago, I felt compelled to break up with a woman I really loved because we didn't have sex enough. Quote, the lack of sex nearly killed me. So apparently he's like rushed to the hospital for lack of sex or something. You know, he gets there, the doctor's like, quick, this man needs sex. Find a nurse. He's going to die, you know. And, you know, I mean, this is pretty much what we're told about sex. And I think if we hear something enough times, I mean, you start to believe it. Like, if I, let's say I got married and I had a baby boy. And he's like in first grade. And I wake up the dude one morning and I'm like, good morning, bud. You're ugly. Let's go to school. And he's like, Dad. You know, I take him to school, and I tuck him into bed that night. I'm like, good night, bud. I say, buddy, you see that tree outside your window? That's the ugly tree. You fell out of the ugly tree, and you hit every branch on the way down. You ugly. Have a good night. And then I wake him up in the morning. I'm like, good morning, bud. Dude, you're uglier than you were yesterday. Even if he was a great-looking kid, he'd be convinced that he's ugly because that's all that he's ever been told. And as I was saying, all that we've ever been told, if you're not doing something's wrong. Now, I know some of you are virgins, and I know some of you are not virgins. And frankly, I don't care what happened last weekend, last month, last year. I mean, I care, but it's in the past. For those of you who are virgins, I take my hat off to you and I say good for you, because people who get married as virgins have a divorce rate that's 70% lower than those who won't wait for marriage. Now, some of you are thinking, well, Jason, look, I'm not a virgin. Or, Jason, I had my virginity taken from me. Does that mean I'm going to have a messed up marriage like my parents had? Well, if you're like me, you're sick of the whole divorce thing. I live in San Diego, and I found out in L.A. now, just an hour and a half north of me in Los Angeles County, there are jewelry stores where you can rent wedding rings. You don't have to buy them anywhere. You can rent the things because they figure you'll turn it in 2 years from now when you get divorced anyway. I was at a high school in Washington. A junior comes up to me, and he said to me after the talk, he's like, Jason, And he told me about his relationship with his girlfriend, an awesome relationship. And he said, Jason, but I'm scared to death to marry this girl. And I go, well, why? It sounds like you got a great thing going. And he said, look, he said, Jason, my dad is on his 9th marriage. This guy, this poor guy, had a heart of gold. He's been through 8 divorces, and he doesn't know how many brothers and sisters he's had. And so, I mean, all of us want this lasting love. Now, what they found out, though, is even if you've made some mistakes, even if you're not a virgin, whatever, they found out that if you meet the woman that you hope to marry, you meet that guy you hope to spend the rest of your life with, they found out that if at least the two of you save the gift of sex with each other for the wedding night, you triple your odds of marital success. You're 3 times as likely never to divorce that person, even if you guys hadn't been a virgin before you met. And so it starts to make a little bit of sense. But what about everything that comes before sex? I mean, can you do this on a date? Can you do that on a date? And there's a couple easy ways to figure it out. Like, what's your name in the black?
Jared.
Okay, Jared. Let's say Jared. Jared meets the woman of his dreams. You fall in love, you get married. Jared goes off on the honeymoon. He comes back, and you find out that your new bride is now pregnant with your firstborn baby girl. And Jared's all jazzed up, and you're there in the delivery room to catch the little girl. And, you know, you look at her, and she's beautiful. She looks just like your bride, and you name her, like, Jaredette or something, you know. And you raise her up, and you buy her the diapers, little ruffles on the butt and everything. And then she raises up, she turns about, you know, 16 years old, and then Jared gets a knock at the door. And it's your daughter's date for the high school prom. And so calmly, Jared cocks the gun, goes to the door, swings the door open, and there's this guy standing there to pick up your princess. And this guy's got about, you know, like 5 or 6 facial piercings. He's got, let's see, what did we have in San Diego now? What's new is they have neck rings. Eyelid rings, not the eyebrow. They got the eyelid rings, neck rings, and spine rings in the back. And so this guy's got all 3 and a cute little chain that joins them together. And then Jared looks over the guy's shoulder, and there's your car. There's his car in your driveway, only he's driving one of these Volkswagen buses with a mattress sticking out the back door. Now, Jared, as well as every guy in this room, knows exactly the honor, the reverence, the purity that you would demand that this guy treat your princess with. And if we call to mind that one day, you know, we're probably going to be dads, we're going to have a daughter that we're going to love this much, and now at this time we're surrounded by women who hopefully have dads who love them the exact same amount. And if I begin to treat my date the way I want someone to treat my daughter, I'm embarking on the demands of real love, which are tough, but they're so rewarding. But to know exactly how far to go with the girl, this is the easiest way. I was at a high school in Chicago. Guy raises his hand after the talk, and he's like, Jason, your talk is fun, but he said, can we get specific? And I was like, well, yeah. And he goes, well, I want to know exactly what I can go with my girlfriend on our date. And I said, well, that's a good question. Well, what are you thinking of? And he's like, and I'm like, oh, geez. Okay. I said, well, we're not a bunch of, you know, third graders here. We can be mature about this. What are you thinking of doing? And he's like, cool. He's like, can we do this and this and this and this? And he's going through this litany of sexual favors. And I said, well, slow down. Pick one. And he said, okay. He said, oral sex. Can we do that? And I said, well, I'll have you answer your own question. And he's like, oh, good. And I said, do you want to get married one day? And he's like, yeah, man, one day I'm going to get married. And I said, that's cool. So I said, if you're going to get married, then your future bride is out there right now somewhere, isn't she? And for the first time in his 17-year life, he thought about his future bride. And he said, yeah, she's out there. Cool. And I said, but let's say she doesn't live here in Chicago. Let's say she lives where I live in San Diego. And school's just getting out, so she's coming home from school right now with her boyfriend, who's a guy that you're never going to meet. And he's got his arm around your future bride. And he's saying, mm-mm, baby girl, I love you so much. I'm always going to be here for you, girl. Your eyes are so beautiful. And she's like, oh, you're so sweet. And he walks her home. He sits her on his couch. His parents aren't home. And he's like, hey, baby girl, you feeling fine? Because you're looking fine. You know. And she's like, stop. And I said to the high school guy, I was like, dude, you know what's going on that couch, don't you? And the guy was like, yeah. And I go, that guy? Ha ha. He's emotionally manipulating your future bride into giving him oral sex, trying to make her think that if she gives him that, he'll like her more when he's just using her more. Does that bother you? And the guy was like, ugh. No, I don't care. And I was like, really? Does it bug you at all? And he's like, no, I don't care. I don't mind. I said, well, focus here. Come back to your happy place. You know, I said, what if it was going on right now as we speak? That guy doing that with a woman who will kiss your children goodnight, does it bother you? And the guy was like, This guy next to him in class goes, I've been ticked off! And I said, whoa! I said, see, it's pretty easy. Then I flew down to, like, Alabama. And I finished the talk. I'm walking through the hallways of the high school. And a teacher comes out. And she pulls me and she goes, oh, Jason, can you talk to my class for a second? I'm like, sure. And I walk into class. And she says, Jason, this is a senior class. And she says, we've been debating the morality of oral sex for 2 weeks now. And I'm like, well, shouldn't you be maybe moving on to other information and stuff, health and science? And she said, it's just been a big debate, and they want to know what you would say. And I said, do you want me to just be really blunt? And they said, yeah. And I said, you just want me to be totally honest? And they said, yeah, just be real. And I just said what came to my heart, and I said, guys, I think that if a guy needs to put his genitals into the mouth of a girl in order to show her what she means to him, then it will show exactly what she means to him. And like this, there is that silence. Because we know in our hearts when we confuse the love and the lust. And don't think I'm saying, you guys need to be like me. Because that is flatly a joke. Because you guys are a guy, I'm a man as well, we're both men. We both have in our hearts this desire to love a girl, but then we have this desire to lust after the girl. And there's this tension in all of our hearts. And I'm not perfect, neither are you. We look in our hearts, there's this battlefield going on. The problem, I beg you girls to realize, that I want you girls to realize that since the time that we guys were about three years old, we've been told that if you want to be a man, if you want to establish your manhood, you got to get some from the girls. Because if you get some with the chick, then dude, you're the man. But look at the mentality. Get some from a girl, then you're the man. Listen to it. Get some. To me, I thought about the other, it sounds like a couple of like fifth grade boys who sneak into, you know, like a convenience store or something, and they shoplift like Jolly Rancher candies, and they're like, hear, hear, you know, and then they run into the parking lot. You know, they run funny because they're all disproportioned because of puberty. They're like, hear, 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 hear. Feet are too big and their knuckles are dragging, and they get outside and they hide. They like hide behind a dumpster and they pull the candy out of their pockets and they're like, I got a red one and a grape one. Did you get some? Did you get some? You'll notice the same mentality. Did you get some? Did you rob? Did you empty the girl? And we guys have been told since the time we were three, dude, if you got some from that girl, if you robbed her of some purity and innocence, you sexually conquered the woman, dude, you are the man. You're the man because you robbed the girl. And we know in our hearts there's something missing in this picture of manhood, because we know we don't find our manhood by emptying a girl. We find our manhood by emptying ourselves for love of that girl. And for me, when I was in high school, the reason why I used girls wasn't because I had this big, horrible intention to damage a girl. That's not in our hearts. But for me, the reason why I confused love and lust is because the influence in my life back then of the pornography. And the thing is that when the teenage girls find out that teenage guys struggle with the pornography, it's not that the girls are all mad at us. They just feel sorry for us that we can't relate to women in a more interesting way. Because what happens to the poor guy is that the pornography for a young guy becomes the most perfect way for a guy to shoot his future marriage in the head. Because it trains me that girls, they're things to be used for my kicks. She's got to be constantly sexually available, physically flawless. When I get done fantasizing after, I go on to my next lust. And what ends up happening to the poor guy is, well, he's sitting there now going like, dude, whatever, man, I got some porn, it's not a problem, I got some internet stuff, I'm not gonna, like, it's not horrible, I'm not going to destroy me. What happens to the poor guy is, while he indulges in the stuff, the poor guy gets emasculated. Emasculation means that when a young man is robbed of the ability to be masculine, because masculinity is defined by the lover of the man who will empty himself for love of his beloved to do what's best for her. But what ends up happening with the porn is it trains me to empty the girls for the sake of myself. And the guy never has an intention, well, I just want to damage this girl. It's just that he's never been sat down. A lot of us guys, girls, we haven't seen our dad since we were three. We haven't had this icon of manhood to teach us how to empty ourselves for our girl. But then when you sit here and you listen to it, you know, this is the truth. There's something true about this. Then I'm going to find my manhood by dying for a girl and just doing what's best for the girl. Now, with the porn, my friend in college had all the porn. His name was Dennis, and he said, dude, he said, man, I got all the porn, but who cares, man? He said, look, I'm getting married in 3 weeks, then you have sex whenever you want, and then I'll throw the porn away. And sure enough, he got married soon after that, and his marriage to Julie lasted a grand total of 3 months, and they were divorced. But he transferred the dreams of lust he had for the fantasies onto his bride, and the marriage was done as soon as it began. And you guys could imagine, like, if you met, like, this woman of your dreams, like, what's her name in the yellow? Joe? Like, Joe meets the woman of his dreams. Joe settles down. You propose to her. You get married. And Joe, you're carrying your bride in your arms into your honeymoon suite for your wedding night. And Joe's like, woo, you know. And she's got her arms around your neck. And she says, Joe, I'm so excited about tonight. And Joe's like, well, I'm jazzed up too, girl. And you're walking her in. And she says, honey, to get ready for you tonight. And Joe's like, yeah. She says, honey, to get ready for you tonight. I've been waiting all my life. And just for tonight. And you're like, uh-huh. She says, in the past few months, she says, I've been looking at thousands of images of naked pornographic men on the internet. Huh? Joe would be like, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, maybe you waited all your life, but don't you sort of have to wait with your eyes? And for those of us guys who have the porn at home, ask yourselves one single question. If you're going to get married one day, ask yourself this. Is my bride's body, is she worth waiting to see, or is she frankly not even worth waiting to see? Because if I can trash the porn now, I am being faithful to her with my eyes before I even lay eyes upon that girl. I'm loving her before I meet the girl. Because if I can't even say no to sex now, then what is my yes even worth? And so with that self-control, you learn how to love a girl properly. And don't think that I'm saying now, you guys the problem. I think that high school guys in America, and even junior high guys, are actually the solution to the entire problem. Only I have the scientific facts to back me up. Right here are the rates of sexual activity for high school students in America. This study shows exactly how many high school students are having sex in America. It shows in the last decade what's happened. Within the last 10 years, the girls' high school sexual activity rates have actually gone down, but they've only gone down about 0.6%. So now 53% of high school girls are virgins. What about high school guys in the last 10 years? High school guys' sexual activity rate in the last 10 years has gone down 20%. So today the majority of high school guys and girls are virgins. It's starting to sweep the country. Over in Atlanta recently, 40,000 high school students met and they signed commitment cards to wait until marriage regardless of what they had done in the past. To sign a commitment of virginity or secondary virginity starting over, which is gorgeous. They stacked up these little commitment cards on the turf where the Falcons play on the dome, and they stacked them up and apparently it hit the roof of the dome. 40,000 high school students saying, you know, I think I'm gonna be faithful to my spouse before I even meet that person. I'm going to train myself in faithfulness so my marriage doesn't end up like my parents' marriage ended up. And now in Washington, D.C., they're bracing in October, it's a year and 7 days from now, the government is expecting 150,000 high school students to show up at the Capitol 1 year from now with a new sexual revolution, a huge rally that's taking place of young people saying, I want a better kind of love. And the cool thing with it is it doesn't matter where you've been. To prove to you the past doesn't matter at all, having come out with me from San Diego is a young lady by the name of Cristalina Padilla. Now, Cristalina and I had dated for a while, and that was 2 weeks ago, and when we stopped dating, because 2 weeks ago I asked her to marry me. And so we got engaged 2 weeks ago, so please give Cristalina a warm welcome. Come on up, hon.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Okay, I'm coming from a completely different angle than Jason. When I was about a sophomore in high school, I had my first serious relationship. And after a while of dating, we thought we were in love and everything was great and perfect. And after a while, we started to get very physical with each other. And after a while, the pressure started to set into our relationship. And he said to me, well, girl, if you really love me, if you truly love me, you'd prove it to me. You'd show me exactly how much you love me. So I needed advice. So I went to my girlfriends, and I said, well, he wants to do this, and he wants to do that. And they said, well, if you aren't doing this, and if you aren't doing that, then you're not a real woman. What's wrong with you? Everybody's doing it. Why not? You love him, right? And I thought, yeah, I love him. Why not? So at the age of 15, I lost my virginity, thinking it was going to cause a huge, great emotional bond between us. And we were just going to be on cloud nine and everything was going to be great forever. And in all actuality, it destroyed any love that we might have had for each other. And all respect was just thrown out the window. Because if I couldn't respect my own body in the relationship, how was he supposed to respect it? And after a while, it seemed like he didn't want to spend time with me anymore. He was just spending time with my body. And we were just constantly fighting, and then he ended up cheating on me, and we ended up going our separate ways and breaking up. And I will never forget the day when he turned and walked away from me for the last time. And I just had this overwhelming feeling of, what have I done? And I knew as he was walking away from me that he had took something from me that I could never get back, and he had took something that he never should have had in the first place. And I knew I couldn't reverse what I had done. Then I thought, well, it's already too late, right? What's the point? I already gave it away. So there I was again in the cafeteria talking with my girlfriend. And I came to the conclusion that if a guy can date me for about 6 months without sleeping with me, then he must love me. And I think now 6 months, 6 months is the price that I put on my body. If he gives me just a little bit of his time and just a little bit of that attention, that's the definition of love. And I carried this mentality all through high school. He was the first guy that I slept with, but he wasn't the last, because it starts a vicious cycle. Just like with drinking, just like with drugs, just like with anything, it starts a vicious cycle. And it will take you deeper and further into it than you ever wanted to go or expected to go. And after a while, I found myself pretty deep into this stuff. And I was in like physically abusive relationships, in and out of relationships, because I didn't know my self-worth anymore. And my dignity was just shot. And I'm not blaming the guys, I'm not blaming you guys, and I don't blame those guys back then. Because I can't blame anyone but myself, and I can't blame my friends either. And you guys will be as much of a gentleman as we ladies require. I wasn't acting much like a lady back then. Therefore, they didn't feel the need to rise up and act like gentlemen around me. And what seems to happen these days is that girls give guys sex for the sake of getting the love from them. And guys give the girls the love for the sake of getting the sex from them. And like I said, I carried this mentality all through high school. And with this lifestyle, I got into the partying, I got into the drinking, I got into the clubbing. You name it, I was into it. And at the time, it was fun, right? It's a very attractive lifestyle. You see it on MTV, you hear it in the music, it's all over the magazines, billboards, and our society says, you should be having sex. If you're not having sex, you've got to go out there, you've got to take it, you've got to do what feels good. Go with the flow. And you do this, and that's your happiness. That's where you're going to find your happiness. Well, I went out, and I did things, and I went with the flow, and I took it. And if that is their definition of happiness, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Because it's not a way to live. I was miserable. And I don't think there was a day that I walked through my high school doors after my sophomore years not worried about something that I had done prior that night or prior that weekend. I was constantly worried, just a shadow following me all over the place. And I know what it's like to party and go out with your friends, but I also know what it's like to wake up the next day when the party's over, the friends are gone, and you're there by yourself. And I just remember thinking, I can't believe I did that last night. I hope I don't have to see him in the halls at school. What if he tells everyone? What if I have an STD now? What if I'm pregnant? What if my mother found out? Constantly worried. And after a while, I was sick of it. I was sick of walking through those high school doors being fake, acting like everything was just peachy, everything was just great, when in all actuality, I was just dying inside. And after a while, my mother came up to me, because usually your parents have an idea what's going on in your life. And I really thought I was fooling my mother. But I was just fooling myself. And she came up to me and she says, Crystalina, there's going to be a talk on Saturday night. And you're going. I'm like, what kind of talk? She's like, well, a talk on abstinence. And I'm like, another sex talk, right? Great. Fun. I'm like, I'm not going to that. She's like, well, you're going if you like it or not. And I thought, well, fine. So I thought, okay, I'll go to her talk, and I'll sit in the very back of the room for 15 minutes, and I'm out of there. I don't have time for this stuff. I have a party to go to, and I have my friends to meet. And in that 15 minutes that I stood still and listened, my life was changed. There was a guy who just got up there and he just laid it out. He talked about all of the sex, all of the drugs, all of the pornography, all of the partying, all of the drinking, everything that he had been into. He just laid it out. And I felt like that guy had grabbed my hand out of the audience and he walked through my life. Like he could see the things I was most ashamed of and the things that I was hiding. And he got all of those things and he put them right in front of my face. And nobody had done that. And then I thought, okay, well, he's been and done the same things that I've done. But there was a huge difference there. He just had this peace, this joy, and this confidence that he carried about himself that I didn't see in my friends, I didn't see in the places I went, and I definitely didn't see in the guys I was dating. And I realized, I want that. I want that peace. I want that freedom not to be ashamed anymore, not to be hiding anymore. I wanted that so badly. And it clicked. And I went home that night and I realized I needed to get my standards out of the gutter and raise them a little higher and start respecting my body. I didn't need to live like that. I felt like I was trapped and I was expected to live like that. But for once in my life, I knew I didn't have to live like that anymore. And I went home that night and I wrote down every single thing that I had done, which was a lot and it was very overwhelming. And then I wrote down everything that this guy had said to me, and I put it in an envelope, and I hid it in my bedroom. Because I knew that weekend, that temptation was going to be there. And I promise each and every one of you that temptation is always going to be there. And sure enough, that weekend, there were my friends. There were those guys. There was that party. And I ran to that letter. And it was a very harsh reminder what was there waiting for me. And I didn't do it again. There was no way I was going back to that. Instead, I wrote another letter. And every time I was tempted to go back to it, I wrote another letter. So now I have this huge stack of letters of all of the no's that I've said in my life. Now, Jason here has waited 27 years for his future bride. We're getting married June 7th, 8 months away. I can't stand up here and tell you on those Friday nights, on those weekends I was partying, I held myself back for love of him. I was respecting my body for love of him. Because that is a downright lie, and I wasn't. And I can stand up here and I can look in your eyes, and I can look in your eyes, and your eyes. But every day for the rest of my life, I am going to look into those eyes. And it tears me apart. That I allowed someone to rob him of the gift that was meant for him. He accepts everything that I've done in my past. He accepts everything. But he loves me now for the person that I've become. In our wedding night, I don't have my virginity to give him. But I do have that huge stack of letters of all of the no's that I said for him. And I'll give those to him the day before our wedding, proving to him that I did start respecting my body for love of him. That I did change my actions and way of life for love of him. And I'll show him that through those letters. And I don't care where you've been or what you've done, because I have been there and I have done that. But right now what matters is where you go from here. And when you walk out those doors, you can just keep on living the way you're living, or you can start over. And there's a free path for you to do that right now. And I was in the deepest, darkest, disgusting hole that you could think of. But I turned my life around, and I can honestly stand here and say, I am genuinely happy. And I wouldn't exchange it for all the pleasures of the world, because there is no exchange. And when I decided to change my life, I would go home, and my friends would be like, what are you, gay now? What are you, a prude? What are you, too good for us? What's your problem? And I would go home and I would tell my mother this. And she would say to me, oh, it's okay. Just put it in the back of your head. It's not a big deal. Well, I tell you today, it is a big deal. And if anyone makes fun of you for living out this lifestyle, you remember it. You write it down. You make a book of it so you don't forget a single word that they say to you. Because when you stand up there on your wedding day and you're in front of your bride, or you're in front of your husband, you tell me, where is the laughter? Where is the mockery? Who is making fun of you then? Nobody. There is complete silence on that day because you have won. And any of those people that made fun of you would pay $1 million to be in your shoes on that day. And when you stand up there, you will say, I will honor you and I will cherish you all the days of my life. Well, today's the day of my life and today's the day of your life. So keep that in mind and take that to heart. For those of you in the audience that are virgins, I have the utmost respect for you. And that is just awesome. And you be proud of that. And don't let anyone ever tell you otherwise. Because I can honestly say, I am jealous. I am so incredibly jealous. And I would do anything to be in your shoes. For those of you that aren't virgins, like I said, it's okay. I've been there. I've done that. And it doesn't matter. All that matters now is where you go from here. And you have a clean slate. Take that to mind and take that to heart. Thank you.
Good show. Now, as you could probably imagine, I'm so incredibly grateful for the day that she started waiting for me. And she was afraid that if she left those guys who were hitting her, emotionally abusing her, loved sex more than they ever loved her, she was afraid that if she left them, she'd miss out on love. The only way we would have missed out on love is she had stayed in those relationships. Because if she was meant to be with those guys, then she'd have the rest of her life within marriage to share the gift of her body with them. But if she wasn't meant to get married to them, then you wonder why she would cling to a sexual relationship, but she didn't, and she had the courage to step out. And I know that young girls, especially, long for intimacy. You long for real love. But I think from a guy's angle, I think the best way for a girl to shoot herself in the foot from getting real intimacy is if she thinks that dressing modestly is just a joke. And I mean, I'll admit, I'm a guy. I don't know the pressures girls are under to dress a certain way and look a certain way, eat a certain way. I was watching TV the other month, and a Barbie doll commercial came on, and I was like, dude, I have to get that Barbie doll. So I went to the store, got the Barbie. Shut up. It's for the talk. It's not like for a collection. I've got issues. No. Don't listen to them. Now, this, I don't know what her name was, is like Indecent Exposure Barbie or something, but it says on the box that you can take this off. It's a bracelet. And it says that you can use it as a bracelet. You can whip it off. You can use it as a hat, a little do-rag, or you can use it as a top for her chest. And it gives these instructions to the 3-year-old girls who play with it. And it fits nicely as a top and as a bracelet since her waist is about the same size as her wrist, you know, so it's interchangeable. And then girls see this, and they're basically told from the ages of 3 and up, you know, behold womanhood. You know, you too can be a woman, okay? You just eat 3 croutons a day. You dress like a collection of body parts, and then you'll find love. So girl looks at Cosmo, girl looks at Glamour, and thinks, okay, well, that outfit's cute. That's going to turn a guy's head. So if I dress like that, guys will look at me. Maybe I'll meet a nice one. Maybe we'll develop love. And it sounds like it makes sense, but what happens is this. You girls, they found out physiologically when it comes to sex are very different than guys. They found out that a woman reaches her sexual peak at about the age of 35. Doesn't mean when sex is best. I guess it's when it's most on her mind or whatever. But a guy reaches his sexual peak at about the age of 18 years of age. So, if you're a girl, you're sitting there on the couch, snuggling with your boyfriend, you know, you're like watching Princess Bride or something, and you're sitting there going, oh, we're just snuggling, oh. Well, good for you. Hey, you know, you're going to hit your sexual peak in like 2 decades, okay? As for the guy, he's going to hit his in like, oh, 3 minutes from now, you know. So to realize the bodies are on different pages. So like, if we see a girl walking down the street dressed like this, you know, let's say she's got one of those like short skirts that you can mistake for a wide belt, you know what I'm talking about? And she's got the lowrider jeans, the belly button sticking out, and a top is made of like, I don't know, like saran wrap or whatever this is, spaghetti straps. You know, we think that she's saying to us, hey boys, the greatest thing about me is my body. And we'll be like, I agree, you know, nice body. You know, but what will happen is if we think that's the best thing about her, which the outfit instructs us to think, then we'll want to get to know her body. Forget about her friends and her family and her dreams. We want to get to know the body. And if she gives him access to the body, thinking that then he'll like her more, more often than not what happens is he gets bored because he's lost respect for her, he's moved on, and she's left thinking, well, maybe if I'd been skinnier, he would have liked me more. No, wait, maybe if I'd given him more sexually, he would have stayed longer. He wouldn't have stayed longer, he would have used her longer, and her heart's made for a better kind of love. And guys get used too, the pressure goes both ways. But with modesty, I'm not saying to you girls, like, I want you to look as ugly as physically possible. You know, I don't want you girls to show up at your prom, and then your boyfriend opens the door and looks at you in your nice modest dress. And he's like, oh, modesty, not raw. You know, girl, you look really cute there in your shapeless plaid ankle-length jumper, you know. Whee! Nice potato sack. Stay home, you know. Modesty doesn't mean a girl tries to look ugly. Modesty means that a girl uses her body to teach men about her dignity. That it's like, I tell you, I didn't know how to treat a girl until I dated one in college who dressed modestly. And it was captivating. Because you could take her seriously as a woman because she wasn't trying to make boys constantly gawk at her body so she'd feel secure. She had a good figure. And she could dress like, hey, boys, check it out. But the way she dressed it, hey, boys, frankly, I'm worth waiting to see. And under that humility was something radiant. Because if a girl dresses like this, yeah, it's exciting. But it doesn't last that long because it doesn't seem like there's that much deeper and it wears off. But when a girl veils her body, she invites that reverence. And there's a mystery about the woman that captivates the man. And so modesty is a weapon for girls to instruct men as to their dignity. By the way a girl dresses, by the way she dances, by the way she speaks, she teaches men how much she's worth. I knew a guy, he lived next door to my friend Ellen. And the guy said to Ellen once, he said, well, you know, I'm a slut. And Ellen was like, well, that's peculiar, you know, you're a guy and everything. But she said, well, don't you feel bad for, you know, just using all these girls and then just leaving them? You know what the guy said? He said, look, Ellen, if the girls are stupid enough to let me have it, then it's their own fault. And there's wisdom in that sickness, that a guy, as she said, will be as much of a gentleman as a woman requires. Through modesty, the woman sets the bar high, that her body is deserving of the dignity. And I'll put Barb away for now. But, What's fun lately is she and I have to go like to all the airports and stuff. We're flying home tomorrow, then we go to D.C. for a week, and so we've got to go through like all this airport security at the like all the different airports we go to. So I travel with my little laptop case here, and inside my laptop case I've got a Barbie doll, I've got like a blonde wig, and so you've got to go through like the X-ray machines. And we were like in Chicago, and I put the bag down. It gets like sucked into the X-ray machine, and like the guy's sitting back there, and he's like, eh. And he's like, huh? He's like, eh. He hits pause. And I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, give me my Barbie, you know. And his friend's over here doing a little wand x-ray. And he's like, hey, come here. And his friend's like, wink, 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 wink. Comes up. He's like, check it out, you know. And then he's like, tink, tink, tink. And I've got Cosmo in here and everything. And they're like, and then they're like, okay, back to work, play, you know. And the friend goes back and the bag comes out. And then I go to grab the bag, and they're actually both staring at me. And I go to grab it, and what do you say to them? Do you say, oh, like the Barbie, the wig, I need that for work. They'd be like, what kind of work do, you fruitcake, you know, arrest them. But they let me on, so that was cool. But girls say, well, Jason, if you can't dress sort of provocatively, how am I going to make a guy interested in me? I mean, can we flirt with guys? I think it depends what you mean by flirt. It means different stuff. Like for me, when I was in second grade, if I liked a girl, I'd throw a rock at her. You know, you just, you know, I'm making progress. She's happy. You know, I have a support group. But girls get to like the fourth grade. And fourth grade girls flirt like this. They see a cute guy, and they're like, oh, he's so cute. And y'all get together, and you're like, he's so cute. Let's give him a note. And they pull out their loose leaf, and they're like, do you like my friend Shanae? You know, yes, no, maybe. It's like a survey. You give him a crayon. He's got to fill it out on his desk. And some of you are still doing this, I see. Okay. We can talk later. But you may want to look into the seventh grade form of flirting might be a notch up. Seventh grade girls. Are there any seventh grade girls here? Oh, no, you're a guy. Yeah, no, the girls. There you go. Now, seventh grade girls flirt like this. Seventh grade girls see a guy, and they're like, oh, he's so cute. And they all get together, and they're like, oh, he's so cute. Should we give him a note? And then your friend is like, no, that's so immature. And she's like, how about when you're leaving class, I'll shove you into him. Oh, that's good. Shove me into him. Oh, that's very good. Pick it up. And see, and you guys see the girls dying here and laughing? The reason they think this is so funny is because this is what they talk about when they go to the bathroom with 30 of them at a time. Or the male bathroom. You know, they're plotting all this stuff. They have couches in there. They probably have drawing boards. You shove them into this locker, I'll come around the back. Da, 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 da. Sick and wrong. Now, this is fun. Then what happens is the girl gets to high school. And the high school girl says, wait a minute. She says, I've got something the guys like. Better than notes, better than getting shoved into, better than getting rocks thrown at me. I know what a guy like better. And she thinks, with all innocence, well, if I give a guy parts of my body, that'll make a guy like me more. And it starts with the mentality, well, so long as I'm being a virgin, I think I'm being good. I think most of us start with that mentality. And this is the one I had. And I figured, okay, if that side of the line is giving away virginity, everything on this side of the line is open season. And so it started out, well, a girl might think, well, making out with guys, hooking up with parties, not a big deal. Doing this with a guy at a party, not a big deal. Doing that with a guy at a party, it can't be that big of a deal. All my friends have already done that. And by the time it's said and done, she's convinced herself that the priceless gift of her body just really isn't that much of a big deal at all. And something begins to die in the girl. I read about this dude in Texas who woke up at 2 in the morning and his dog started barking. You guys have dogs? The dogs in Nebraska? Yeah, this dude had a dog. And the guy wakes up and his dog's barking like 2 in the morning. He gets up and he's like, comes to the backyard. The dog is there barking at a bush at like 2 in the morning. And the guy's like, that's great. That's brilliant. Shut up. And he goes to sleep. He's out for 15 minutes and the dog resumes barking. Guy threw a fit, came outside with a stick and said, come here, pooch. And he just smacks the dog and beats it into submission to shut it up from barking at the stupid bush at 2:15 in the morning. He goes to sleep. 15 minutes later, dog starts freaking out at the bush, just barking ferociously at the stupid bush again. The guy lost it, and he actually took a handgun into the backyard, and the man actually did. He shot and killed the dog and returned at that point peacefully to sleep. At that point, however, the robber who's hiding in the bushes just got out of the bushes, walked over the body of the dead dog. The guy came inside the man's house, killed him in his sleep, and robbed everything that the guy owns. And that dog is like my conscience. And I've said to my conscience, dude, just shut up. Don't remind me I shouldn't be doing this with her. Shut up. Don't remind me I should be looking at this. Shut up. And then I killed the voice, stood back thinking, man, now I'm free because I'm not doing what my parents say. I'm doing whatever I want. And I wondered, if I'm free, why am I almost suicidal for the total lack of joy that's in my life? Because it was only by listening to that heart of telling you right from wrong that I was able to find the love that I had always wanted in the first place. Because with a girl, I don't think a girl wants like a whole series of physical relationships with random guys arbitrarily to marry one and hope he doesn't cheat on her. We were at a high school in Michigan. A girl came up to us after the talk and she said that she'd slept with 15 guys in the last 3 months. And we said, you know, and she started talking. We said, well, why? And she said, it's just fun. And you know that the school had the names for her. Slept with 15 guys. Oh, yeah, she is a this. She is a that. They had a litany of names for her. And we sat and we asked why. And first she said it was just fun. You go to the parties, it's fun. You sleep with the guys, it's all good. And then we looked into her heart. We looked into her eyes. And we said, is it really that fun? And she just stopped because someone was finally taking her heart seriously and being real with her. And she said, no, it's not fun. She said, look, Jason, look, Chrisleena. She says, my family's going through divorce right now. There's so much hurt in my family that just for a minute those parties, when those guys hold me, it feels like love, and it takes that hurt away. And even if they're using me, I don't care. At least I feel wanted. At least I feel desired. I don't care if she slept with 100 guys. She's not a slut. This is a woman whose heart is identical to yours and mine because all that she wants is real love. And a lot of times the girl can think, well, Jason, look, you don't get it. Jason, look, I'm not a virgin. Or Jason, I had my virginity taken from me. Or Jason, something bad happened to me when I was a little girl. And what good guy like you're all talking about, as if I really know any, would want a girl like me that's done all the stuff that I've done? Jason, I'm damaged goods. It's too late. Once it's gone, it's gone. Well, I'll tell you the greatest example of womanhood in my life is a girl who slept with more men than I can count. Her name's Mary. And at one point she figured, I want a better kind of love. I am worth it. And she turned her life around 180 degrees. She's married a friend of mine named John. They're settling down to make the most gorgeous family you could ever imagine. And they beam with joy. They beam with innocence. And she had done anything and everything there was out there. Chrisleena chose one day to start respecting herself. And my goodness, how grateful I am. And because we're getting married in 247 days, not that anyone's counting, We don't want a divorce, and so we're going to do a couple things because we don't have plans for divorce. Number one, no way are we going to sleep together before we get married. She's worth waiting for. And if I had sex with her now, I'd be lying to her with my body. My body would be saying, I am yours. I give myself totally to you. But I'm not her husband. I'm not totally hers. There's a movie, I guess, Vanilla Sky. My friend saw it. And he said, dude, there's this line in that movie where this girl, I think she was sleeping with Tom Cruise, and they were married. And she said, look, she said, your body is making promises to me, even if you won't. And if I would be sleeping with her, my body's making this promise to her that doesn't exist in reality. And so we're saving that gift for marriage, because now is the only time we have to prepare for marriage. We'll have the rest of our lives for that awesome gift. But then number two, no way are we living together before we get married. You know that couples like shack up or cohabitate, then they get married? You know what their divorce rate is? It's 80%. 8 out of 10 couples like test drive the marriage, then get married because they don't have enough faith in each other. They end up getting divorced, 8 out of 10 of them, usually within 3 years of their wedding date. So we're not going there. But very importantly, no way on earth am I going to put the girl's body on contraception. I mean, how disrespectful could I possibly get to her to treat her like her pregnancy is a disease and I need to neuter the girl so I can have lifeless love with her. You girls, you high school girls, I love you, but you have been lied to about the birth control pill, lied to about Depo, the shot, Norplant. You want to know what, by government law, they do not have to tell you when they give you the birth control pill. They don't have to tell you. One, that the method of birth control, one of which is it is abortifacient, which means if you do get pregnant on the pill, which does happen often, that the womb, because of the hormones of the pill, will still expel the baby while it's in its first trimester so that you'll never know that you were pregnant in the first place. They don't have to tell you that. They don't tell teenage girls at all that if you go on the birth control pill and you have sex, the birth control pill's hormones actually thin out the lining of your uterus, making you more susceptible to sexually transmitted diseases, and it weakens your immune system. So if you're on the pill, you're more likely to get AIDS and all of the STDs in the book. They don't tell the girls that. They don't tell the girls when they give you a pack of pills and say, well, enjoy your pills, I hope everything's fine, have safe sex. They don't bother to tell the girl that if she has 3 sexual partners in her life, she's 15 times as likely to develop cervical cancer. They don't bother to tell her that if she's on the pill, she increases her chance of getting breast cancer by 40%. They simply omit these facts when they give you the pill and tell you, oh, it's going to help regulate your cycle. Oh, it'll help clear up your acne. I asked the OBGYN, one of the best ones in the country, I said, how many teenage girls actually need to be on the pill for medical reasons? And he said, honestly? And I said, yeah, how many actually need to be on it? Because they're all put on it. And he said, honestly, he said, from an obstetrician gynecologist perspective, he said, none need to be on it. He says, we have alternatives to all of this stuff that actually heals the woman instead of suppressing it, but doctors get a lot of money from pharmaceutical companies, and it's very easy, and so we just put the girls on the pill. I happen to think that you girls' bodies are worth more. As for you guys, all of us have been lied to about the whole condom thing. Like, I'll ask you. Crystalie and I were in Philly. We asked 13,000 students this question, and their faculty, and their parents. One person in 13,000 got the answer right. The answer to the question is simple. What's the most common sexually transmitted disease? What would you say? AIDS? Nope. Any other ones? Warts? Nope. What's that? HPV. Wow. He actually got it right. This is what most students say. Most students say AIDS, herpes, gonorrhea, chlamydia. First one they always say is AIDS. AIDS is less than 1% of all STDs. It's relatively rare. A lot of people say herpes. Herpes is pretty common. 1 out of 5 people in Nebraska has genital herpes, which is incurable. You can get it by means of oral sex. My friend in high school got herpes on his face from having oral sex with a girl. Too bad for him now. If he gets married, he can't kiss his kids goodnight. Because if he does, he could give... We were at a church school the other day, and a mom came up to me, and she said, Jason, what you said about herpes in the mouth is right. She says, my baby boy is only 2 years old, and he has herpes through his nose, because when he was an infant, one of our relatives kissed him, and that relative didn't even know that they had herpes on the mouth, which they had gotten from oral sex. So make sure that you inform people that oral sex is not safe. You can get virtually every STD in the book now by means of oral sex, but they don't want to tell you this stuff, because they just want to say, go have safe sex. You're thinking, well, okay, well, what's more common than that? Chlamydia is number 2. More teenage girls get chlamydia than the flu. And about 70% of high school students who have it, guys and girls, don't even know that they're infected. problem is with the girls that this can sterilize you before you ever know that you're infected with it, meaning keep you from being able to bear children. It can get healed, but girls don't go get tested because they think they're fine because they feel fine. But number one out there now is something called HPV, human papillomavirus. You don't hear squat about this one. You don't hear about it from Planned Parenthood. You don't hear about it by MTV. This, although it kills twice as many girls a year as AIDS does, because it causes 99% of cervical cancer, but you don't hear squat about it. Now, 1% of people who get it get warts. 99% of people get it don't get the warts, so they think they're fine. Problem is, I know a guy who got married. He had a little girl. She's a year old, and she's coughing. So he scoops up the girl, took her to the doctors, and he said, "Hey, doc, can you take a peek at my girl? She's coughing a lot." And the doctor said, "Sure, sure." And they did a throat culture on the girl. And the doctor said, "Sir, I apologize, but your daughter has genital warts growing through her throat." And the dad said, "My God, how could she get that? I don't have an STD. My wife doesn't have an STD." And the man said, "Sir, have you or your wife had sexual intercourse with anyone other than each other before you were married?" And the guy said, "Well, my wife was a virgin, but I wasn't. But look, doc, it was safe. I mean, all the girls, was, I mean, condom and everything." And the doctor said, "I'm sorry, scientifically, safe sex has not been proven. And sir, you've contracted human papillomavirus. You've carried it undetected into marriage because the majority of guys who have it are unaware of their infection. And you've carried it into your marriage. You've infected your wife. You need to tell this to her. And your child contracted in your wife's womb. And we'll need to periodically burn the warts off your daughter's throat with a laser because we don't have a cure for this. I'm sorry, sir." The guy just obviously sat there with his jaw on the floor. Why doesn't anyone tell us this? How common is this thing? Well, how common is it? This right here is a Journal of Gynecology for women. They tested 242 teenage girls who've only had sex once, with one guy at least. They found, of the 242 women who had only had one sexual partner, we found that the risk of acquiring cervical human papillomavirus infection was 46%. Meaning that half of the girls who'd only had sex with one guy had already acquired HPV. The majority of the time, it goes away and it doesn't bother the girl much, but the problem is it's so rampant now, it's causing these huge problems. Now you're thinking, well, Jason, if it's this big of a deal, why doesn't people tell us about it? Well, this is one big reason, Cosmopolitan Magazine. This is like the number one instruction manual, in my opinion, on how to get used by a guy. So if a girl wants to get used, she should subscribe, and it'll teach you how to do that thoroughly. And it says page 136. You open the cover. The cover says, "Dear teenage girl." It says, "Gynecologist news that your doctor is just too wimpy to tell you girls." And so you're thinking, oh, cool, they'll give us a scoop. You open it up, and it says, "How to stay free of STDs as a teenage girl." And it says, "To make sure to examine the tip of a condom for tiny holes before sex to make sure that no viruses will sneak through during sex." Thank you. They skipped out the fact that HPV is spread from mid-thigh to mid-abdomen contact. Any skin-to-skin contact in that region can transmit this incurable virus. So the condom is useless. You can even get it from hand-to-genital contact. Now, you can get it from oral sex. Why didn't Cosmo tell you about the risks of oral sex? Because 10 pages later, they're recommending you give it to your boyfriend so that he'll like you more. We're being just slightly lied to here. We're being guided by people who have no clue what they're talking about. The government issued this report, but they didn't circulate it. This is the big study they did on the condom and STDs. It was done by the National Institutes of Health, and what they did is they studied 8 of some of the most common sexually transmitted diseases in America that infect millions of high school students. They studied it, and you know what they found out? You guys, according to the latest research, we do not have sufficient scientific evidence to prove that the condom can protect you guys from 6 of the 8 most common STDs. Girls, we don't have evidence that it can protect you against 7 of 8 of some of the most common STDs. Now, I read this, and I'm like, what the heck? Why don't they tell us this when they tell us, oh, go have safe sex, roll a condom on? And so I read through it. Then I read through it again. Then I read through the footnotes. You know what the footnotes said? Oh, if you want to hear the doctors discussing this, send us $200, and we'll give it to you. So I wrote a check, $200, mailed it to EDC. They sent me 20 hours of doctors discussing the report as they made it. I read through, and then there I found it. I was listening. It was like on like tape 14 was the gem. They asked the doctor, shouldn't we tell teenage girls about the risks of HPV? And I was like, oh, sweet, here's the answer. And the doctor said, well, she said we may want to go there, but she said, look, we do have effective secondary prevention methods. Well, that sounds great. Problem is, what she meant but didn't say was that means burning it or freezing it off of a girl's cervix, which can make her infertile. And then she says, but we have effective secondary prevention methods. And she said, look, it would only cause an epidemic of widespread panic and fear amongst young people and adolescents who are just embarking on their Sexual careers? Ha, ha, ha. And all the doctors laughed. And then she said, next slide, please. Sexual careers, like we're prostitutes or something? Then they asked her, why don't we tell young girls at least that the condom isn't that effective? And she said, look. She said, if we tell teenage girls that the condom isn't that effective, it'll kill women. And the person was like, what do you mean it's going to kill women to give them the truth? And the doctor said, look. She said, teenage girls have no sexual self-control. And if you tell them the condom isn't that effective, they'll just keep having sex and lose what little beneficial effects the condom might have provided them with. I don't know about you, but I feel insulted by this. Now, to tell you you have no sexual self-control, that's like, for her birthday a couple months ago, I bought her a chihuahua, right? This little, like, one-pound glorified rat dog, you know? I mean, sorry, I'm like in timeout, you know, but he's more of a fur-bearing cockroach, not quite a rat, but he's really, sorry. No, but he's cute. He's got like 9-foot ears, and he's running around the house, and a little guy has just hit puppy puberty, if you know what I mean. Like, he's in heat all the time. It's really gross. And, like, when he comes into her bedroom, like, her stuffed animals hide under the furniture. Like, oh, no, here comes the dog. All right. And it was just getting embarrassing. So I picked up Savia, you know, the dog, and I put him on the end table. And I pick up one of his girlfriends. It's like a Miss Piggy stuffed animal. And I sit down. I'm like, you two, I really want you to practice the virtue of chastity and abstinence. And he didn't have a clue. And so, obviously, he went on doing his own thing. And so we're going to get the guy, bring him to Pacific Beach in a couple weeks, and we're getting the little dude neutered. There's no option. He has no sexual self-control. We've got to neuter him. And so when they tell you, well, we want you to practice abstinence, but if you can, at least have safe sex. You know what they're saying? You have no sexual self-control, so neuter yourselves. Temporarily sterilize each other because you don't have self-control, so you need birth control. But they don't tell you guys about the birth control. We go to the airports, and we're now picking up all these bride magazines to look for, you know, bridesmaids' dresses, and it's all fun. Check this out here. She'll hold it for me. This is a great ad. This is a new kind of contraception out. It's a ring for women to wear inside their cervix so that it can release all the stuff of a birth control pill. Now, I want you guys just to look at this. This is a couple and just this hot, passionate embrace. And come back here. We'll just take a quick glance. And now, I want you all to look at it. And I want you to listen to what it says. Just flip a page. Check this out. You flip the page. See this page? Well, you have to have a telescope to read what it says. So flip it back and let me translate what it says for you. And before I do, you ever see those commercials on TV that have like people like happy and they're like running through a field and they look like they're on so happy they're on some type of medication and they look like they're on like some JCPenney catalog. They're like, ah! And then it says, ask your doctor if minoxifloxacin is right for you. And then it says like, may cause headaches, bloating, disease, you know, brain hemorrhage, all that stuff. And then you're like, yeah, I want that. And then here, it shows you this passionate embrace. Oh, like, man, look at that passion. Now, here's what it says on the back page. May cause blood clots, heart attack, stroke, nausea, death, breast cancer, gallbladder disease, headache, bleeding irregularities, ectopic pregnancy, fluid retention, emotional disorders, or infertility, brain hemorrhages, depression, hair loss, weight gain, cramps, and bloating. Have a great honeymoon. Self-control suddenly becomes a beautiful option when you look at the side effects of the birth control. And I know Kristalina's talked to a lot of students, whole STD thing, and she'll share some jabs as well.
A couple things that happened. When I was in high school, I knew the lifestyle I was living, and when I walked out of my health classes, I was freaked out. But I didn't want to talk about it, I didn't want to deal with it, and I definitely was not about to go get tested. But I knew if I wanted to live this lifestyle out, I had to face certain things head on. So for those of you that have been sexually active, go get tested. And do this with urgency. Because imagine, okay, there could be something wrong with you, and you wait 2 days, you wait a week, you wait a month. It just could be getting worse. And just because you ignore it doesn't mean it's going to go away. So if you have been sexually active, please go get tested. And how you can do this is go to the yellow pages at home, flip, and it's the first couple pages in the A, and go under abortion alternatives, and there should be a list of good crisis pregnancy centers or clinics where you can go get tested, or they can refer you to a place that you can get tested at. It's free, it's safe, and it's confidential. No one needs to know you went. You don't need to tell anyone. It's between you and the physician. Go get tested. Because imagine you're worried something's wrong with you. You go in there absolutely freaked out, and then they tell you there's nothing wrong, you're fine. Imagine the weight you leave at the door leaving that place. Imagine the freedom and peace that you would have leaving that place. And that's what I got to experience. There was nothing wrong with me. And I left it at the door. And that's what you can do. Now, what you can do is also go to your counselor here in the school, and they can give you a number if you want to. Now, another thing I want to kind of touch on, I know you're going to be scared to go get tested and whatnot, but one of the girls in Philadelphia comes up to me, and she's just bawling, crying. And it turns out she slept with her boyfriend once, and 11 days after that, she contracted herpes. Another girl, she emailed me and let me know, okay, I went and I got tested after the talk. Well, it turns out I did have HPV. And she started getting the genital warts after she started emailing me because it was such a long period of time. In Texas, a girl comes up to me and she's just kind of crying. And she said, whoever you speak with, please tell them this. I have HPV right now and it has gotten to the point and so bad that they had to remove part of my cervix. And tell them it is just not worth it. And it's not. So go get tested. I want to kind of reiterate on the pill with the girls. If you are on the pill, go home tonight and trash it. I used to be on the pill, I used to be on the Depo shot, and I see that stuff as just freely putting poison into your body. Because that pill can just harm you more than your body will ever benefit from. And it is just not worth it. And it is so degrading as a woman for them to say, well, you have no self-control as a woman, so let's put you on some birth control. So for love of your bodies, go home tonight and just trash the stuff. Now, enough about the bad news, enough about STDs. How about how you can live out this lifestyle? And abstinence is a lifestyle. It's a whole mind change. It's the way you think. It's the way you talk. It's the way you dress, the places you go. And the first thing that I would tell you is if you are in a sexually active relationship, take the sex out. Take the physical aspect of the relationship out and really see what it's made of. Because if it's based on a foundation that is physical, and you take that out, you have nothing left. And you can get out of a dead-end relationship. And a girl knows when she is being used. She knows it. But it's hard to admit it. So if you are in a sexually active relationship, take the sex out. Because frankly, if they ask you to do those things, they just don't love you. And if you do those things back with them in return, that is just not loving them. Another thing, ladies, go home tonight or go to the mall and get a white candle. Have your husband light that on your wedding night as a symbol of your purity. You can lose your virginity, but you can regain your purity, and that is what matters. Guys, you want to know if this is attractive or not? Thinking from a 22-year-old girl, what is attractive? By the time guys are my age and they're in college, I could walk on a campus college, and most of those guys have slept with about 10 girls. They are a dime a dozen. Guys who will just sleep with random girls are a dime a dozen. And you can find those guys anywhere. But a guy that can save himself, learn how to control himself, learn how to be a real man, and not subject himself to all these different temptations that he has, but can control that and save himself for his beloved, that is a man. And that is attractive. And that is what women are looking for these days. Because it's not romantic to find some guy and what, I'm scared he's going to give me herpes or something? That's not romance. And it doesn't take a man to say yes to sex, because any Joe Schmo can say yes to sex. But only a real man can say that no. And guys, I don't care where you've been or what you've done, because I've been there, I've done that. You have permission now to just start over and let today be the new day and the rest of your life. Thank you.
Now, to follow what she said, I went to a high school of 1,200 girls. I didn't go to the high school myself. I went and talked to the high school of 1,200 girls. And when I was there, I asked all 1,400, it was 1,400 girls in Louisiana. I did this talk for the girls, and I said, girls, I want to take a poll for guys. You got 1,400 girls here. I said, what if you girls, I just want to raise a hand, what if you girls met a guy in college who maybe he made some mistakes in high school, but he heard this talk, and from that minute forward, he practiced this virtue of chastity and purity. Then you met the guy in college. How many of you girls out of 1,400 think that he's undeniably attractive? 1,400 high school girls put their hand up and said, oh, if that guy can sacrifice and love his bride before he even sees her, that's the difference between a man and a boy. We had 1,400 girls who were already attracted to this guy who they hadn't even laid eyes upon yet. As far as like, you girls, and you guys, don't think that it's too late. I know a girl who got abducted in Texas, and a guy did disgusting things to her. And when he was done with her, he threw her in a latrine in Southern California. Construction workers came in, looked in the latrine, saw this little girl up to her neck shivering in the human waste. And they said, my God, who could do this to a little girl? And they lower a construction worker in there to pull her out. And she gets freaked out and scared. She starts taking the human waste, throwing it up at the guy, saying, don't touch me. Just leave me here. Just leave me here. She had been so hurt that she didn't know who to trust, and she wanted to stay in the sewer. They had to take one of the construction workers, lower him in there to pull her body out, because she had been so hurt she didn't know who to trust, and she wanted to stay and actually live in the sewer. And I stick my hand, and he had to pull her out and say, it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. You don't need to live down here. I'm sort of putting my hand into your heart and saying, come on. There's this better kind of love that is simply waiting for you. Now, as you know, you could have two reactions to this. We were at a high school, and after the talk, a guy came, a guy was in like the locker room or the hallway, and a girl came up to me and she said, Jason, that talk was awesome. She said the school loved it. We've never heard anything like that before. And it was just really powerful. And she said, but there was one guy I saw in the hallway that was really mad at you, Jason. And she said, Jason, he slammed his locker shut. And he said to his friend, dude, all that guy did was come into our school, take away all our game, and now none of us are going to get any until the chicks forget about this guy in 3 weeks. And he walked off. And obviously, I assume the goodness of your hearts is guys, and that's not your reaction. And then I went to this school out on the East Coast where they have the best high school basketball team in the country. The Arrows there, they won nationals, and the center of the basketball team walks up to me. And he's like 6'10", and so he walks up to me and he's like, you know, Jason, can we talk in the back? And I'm like, yes, sir, yes, come with me. And so we walked back behind the curtain of the stage and we sat down. I said, well, what's going on? And he said, dude, he said, Jason, I've been with so many girls. I've been with every girl on this campus that I wanted to be with. He said, I've never really had a relationship, so to speak, with a girl, but I've had sex with as many of them as I wanted. And he said, but look, Jason, he said, man, I want to be faithful to my bride before I meet her. I want that secondary virginity thing. I know what it's like to have someone's marriage fall apart. Dude, I don't want that. I want to train myself in faithfulness for love of my bride so we can make it last. And he said, how do you get that secondary virginity? And we sat there and we talked for 3 hours about how you just decide and you make this commitment and you can write it down, you can get the white candle, do whatever you want, wear a little chastity ring on your finger, whatever you want, and you start it over. And I know a couple, they signed this little commitment card to maintain their virginity. The guy got it in high school, signed the thing, and said, I'll save myself from marriage, blah, 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 and he dated it. And then he went off to college, and he met this girl. They fell in love. They got engaged. And then he's walking down the street, and his little commitment card falls out of his wallet or something, lands on the ground. And his fiancée was like, oh, what's that? And he's like, give me that. And she's like, oh. And she pulls it out, and she says, oh. She says, I signed one of these little absence commitment cards when I was in high school. He's like, really? And she pulls her out of her purse. They put them next to each other. Not only have they both signed a card, but they signed the same type of card on the same year, of the exact same day, years before they had ever met. And so it's so cool to realize that if you want this better kind of love, I have so many guys come up to me at high school and say, Jason, where can I find these modest girls? I want to find a pure girl. And I've had girls come, where are these guys? And so to help set this up at the school so you can meet each other for one, I'm setting up something called, I set them up at all the schools I go to. It's called a Pure Love Club. It's not like an abstinence bereavement group or something where, you know, you get together and you're like, did you have sex? You know, no. Did you have sex? No. Let's hug. Wee. I mean, that's not what this thing is. This club thing is basically an army of people around the country who's basically turning civilization around and starting a brand new sexual revolution. And I want you guys to know that you are on the front lines of a new sexual revolution, and you are the ones who are going to flip the entire thing around for the entire country. I have so much confidence in you and love for you. You've sat there in pure silence for an hour. Why? Because you see that we love you. We want what is best for you, and we have confidence that you guys are going to be the ones to flip the whole thing around. So we love you guys. And we just want you to have an awesome semester, and you guys have been an awesome audience. Take care of yourselves. Now, now one thing I want to do when we're done, we got these things, Congress is passing legislation now on whether they're not, how much money they're going to give to abstinence education like this, because the congressmen are basically saying teenagers don't want to hear about chastity and abstinence. They want to learn how to roll condoms on and prevent venereal diseases. That's really what they want. And so what I'm doing is over the past few days, I've gotten thousands of these signed by high school students, that these are being taken to Congress and being used to change legislation around the country, saying, no, as a high school student, I'd rather learn how to have authentic love than how to avoid a venereal infection. And so this thing, you sign it, and it's going to go to Congress saying, yeah, give some money this type of education. Because if my future spouse is at some school on the other side of the country, and they're telling her or telling him how to have safe sex when that's a lie, I'd much rather you tell my future spouse that it's worth it to save it for marriage. And so we printed up like 300, 350 of these things, and we got a bunch of pencils. And when we're done, we're just going to spread them out all over the floor here, whatever, with pencils. And if you guys sign them and just dump them back to us, we'll bring these things into Congress for you guys and have someone testify on your behalf that we want this kind of love and this kind of education. So we're going to put these all over the floor with pens and jazz like that. And if you want to hang out and talk to Chris or I, we can hang out for a little while. But you probably got some announcements too.